excited to be here today to talk about advancing adult and adolescent immunizations at the AMA and the things that we're involved in. And specifically, I'm just going to focus on a couple of the strategic partnership initiatives that we're involved in, as well as our advocacy work around sound science-based public health policy in the immunizations arena. Our roadmap for this morning, just what I'm going to talk about a little bit. First, I'm going to go over the current immunization recommendations from ACIP. ACIP is the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. And then I'm going to talk about two strategic partnership initiatives that we're involved in. The first is the National Influenza Vaccine Summit. The second is the Immunization Congress. And then I'm going to switch gears and talk about some of the advocacy work that we're doing. And these are continuing medical education events, or CME events. And these are being done in states where anti-vaccine legislation has been introduced. Where does the AMA stand on immunizations currently? Right now, adult immunization and influenza is one of our centers of excellence. Advancing adult immunization is the primary objective, although we do work on advancing adult adolescent immunizations as well. This focuses both on annual vaccinations, such as influenza, as well as lifetime immunizations, such as hepatitis B, Tdap, and zoster. And really what we're advocating for is an equitable distribution of vaccines, as well as adequate reimbursement for providers. The second one has become really, really important in our strategic partnership initiatives. And we do a lot of education for providers, not only providers, but their staff and their patients, which is really the public as well. I mentioned ACIP a little while ago. ACIP is the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. This is a scientific advisory group to the CDC. They actually met last week in Atlanta. It's a very exciting meeting. And basically what ACIP does is they sort of set the standard on what vaccines we get in the U.S. and when we get them. So they're the ones that advise CDC to make up all those beautiful charts that you can download for providers about when you give immunizations. Currently, they recommend immunizing adults against 10 infectious diseases. But despite that, there are really huge gaps between what they're targeting and what we actually see in reality, especially for adult and adolescent populations. There are a lot of reasons for this. A lot of it is a knowledge gap. Patients don't know to ask for them. Providers don't have the time or don't know that they're supposed to be giving them. So this obviously sort of changes the supply and demand curve. That also affects manufacture and distribution of these vaccines. And then lastly, I mentioned this before, but there are a lot of administration and financing problems. There are some financing problems on the pediatric side, but these are much more pronounced on the adolescent and adult side. Providers just really aren't being reimbursed at adequate rates. So moving into two of the partnership initiatives that we're going to be talking about. The first is the National Influenza Vaccine Summit. The summit was created by the AMA and CDC back in 2001, and basically when they got together, they said, we need to figure out a way to increase the annual rates of immunization for flu each year. So what they do is they meet in April, and it's a huge group of strategic partners. And I've listed just a couple of the stakeholders or partners at the bottom of the slide, but there's all the major vaccine manufacturers and distributors. There's obviously a lot of people from public health, city public health, county public health, local public health agencies, they're all there, as well as the medical associations. Obviously, we're a co-sponsor of the summit, but AAP, AAFP, the American Academy of Family Physicians, the American College of Physicians are also represented, as well as our other public health partners, such as the pharmacy industry. Obviously, nurses play a huge role in this, so they're a big partner at the table as well. And basically, when everyone gets together in April, they can talk about the upcoming flu season. They can look at what went well in the last season, and they can look at where the pitfalls were, and then they can also look ahead to say, what can we do better for next year? What are some of the best practices that are working right now? The real work of the summit then actually picks up in August, where they actually have weekly email lists, and then they also have weekly conference calls, where everyone can get online and say, I'm having we have a ton of vaccine and we're not sure how to move it. Does anyone else know how to move it? Or, you know, we're still having some problems getting some from our distributor. So it's a great way in real time to be able to work through some of those issues. And I should mention here, though, that although the vaccine summit, actually, we focus on annual influenza, this is a great preparedness exercise because, as we all know, it's sort of a litmus test for how well we're going to be able to do in a pandemic event. So it's a lot about preparing us in the event of a disaster. The second thing I'm going to talk about, the second partnership initiative, is the National Immunization Congress. And this was actually a partnership between the American Medical Association and the American Academy of Pediatrics. And this sort of builds on the summit model, in that we brought together a bunch of stakeholders to attack the idea of how can we increase adolescent and adult immunization rates based on the success that the pediatric population has had. So that's really what we're trying to do, improve pediatric and adult immunization rates, improve access to affordable vaccinations, as well as improve the equitable distribution of vaccines. This group met in February of 2007. They got into a lot of different work groups, and then they tried to see what issues were really boiling to the top. And out of that meeting came six task forces. And these were the, after the work groups ended up meeting, these were the things that the group really, really wanted to keep working on. So these were the six that came out of them. It was the public-private financing group. I mentioned financing before as a big problem. The 317 group, which works to advocate for adequate funding of the 317 program and perhaps expanding it. Vaccines for underinsured or uninsured adults. Adult vaccination issues. Adolescent vaccination issues. And a category we called quick win. And quick win was really just a bunch of things that we thought that maybe we could, you know, in 6 to 12 months, this was the low-hanging fruit. What could we do in 6 to 12 months that might be easy for us to accomplish? And right now, all six task forces currently meet by conference call. These are all volunteer. They're all based from people who came to the Congress and who are just really interested in these issues. And I won't bore you with what every single one of the task forces is doing, but I just wanted to highlight one so you can get an idea of what they're doing, even just on a volunteer basis. And that, the public-private financing group is actually building on a business case that the American Academy of Pediatrics created a couple of years ago. And basically what the AAP did was they created this business case that said, you know, pediatric providers aren't really reimbursed adequately for the vaccines that they provide to the kids that they see. And, you know, they're all running a business, and they're really disincentivized to provide these vaccines if they're not going to be paid for them adequately. So what we did was, we said, why can't we just expand this business case for the adult and the adolescent population, take it to the payers, and try and negotiate better rates with them? And it should be noted here that when AAP did this a couple years ago, they brought it to a bunch of payers, but they did actually have significant success with Cigna, where they actually got them to increase their reimbursement rates by quite a bit. So that's what we're doing now. We're in the process of revising that, and we're also engaging AHIP, which is America's Health Insurance Plans, because we figured we may as well get as much input as we can, see what the payers want to know, what kind of data are they going to need to be able to take back to their companies so that we can get adequate reimbursement rates. So I'm going to switch gears out of the partnership mode now. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the CME events that I mentioned before. These are the continuing medical education events for providers, and I'm sure that you've all heard about the controversy of whether vaccines cause autism. This has been in the news a lot lately. Jenny McCarthy has written a book. She is now on the circuit. She's been on Oprah. She's been on Larry King, a whole bunch of other places as well. And despite there being no evidence right now that there's a link between vaccines and autism, there's a lot of skepticism, there's a lot of worry in the lay community that there might be some sort of link. And so what we've seen is that there's actually a significant amount of states that now have some sort of either pending legislation or have passed legislation that prohibit the use of thimerosal-containing vaccines. So what we've done is we've tried to create these CME events for providers just to sort of educate them on what the current science is right now. What are providers going to see in their communities? What are parents going to come back with them at? And I know when I first got involved in this, I didn't really believe that there was that much legislation out there. So if you look back to 2004, you can see that there were only two states that had anti-vaccine legislation. And I should mention here that when I say anti-vaccine legislation, that's a pretty broad category. Anti-vaccine legislation really means it encompasses anything from the state has restricted the amount of thimerosal that can be in a vaccine, it's restricted the amount of mercury that can be in a vaccine, or it has limited who the vaccine can be given to. Some states, like California, will not allow thimerosal vaccine to be given to pregnant women or children. This is also true, I believe, in Iowa as well. So it's a wide range of how they restrict it. Some states actually just say, well, if you have access to a whole bunch of vaccines and they have varying degrees of mercury in them, you have to use the one with the lowest amount of mercury. So we skip ahead to 2005, and we see a couple more states actually introduce some legislation. So this brought us up to 6. Then we skip ahead to 2006, and we see that there's a dramatic rise in how many states have introduced this legislation. Everyone's sort of gotten on the bandwagon here. And what's nice to see, though, is that of the 23 states that were introduced, 22 did not pass. And, you know, the theory behind this is, there's one theory behind it, and that is, you know, the vaccine advocates got really freaked out. And they said, well, we really need to do something about this. And they got involved, and they started to lobby their state legislatures, and therefore a lot of them didn't pass. One interesting thing, though, that did happen in Hawaii, you'll notice that's one of the states that didn't pass. It didn't pass because the legislature voted it down. It actually passed because they brought it to the governor and he overturned it. And I'd just like to read his rationale for why he did so. This bill ignores the body of current scientific evidence on thimerosal-containing vaccines. Its enactment could cause some parents to doubt the general safety of vaccines and decline vaccinations to their children. Any action that potentially lowers the immunization rate is of concern to me, particularly since Hawaii is a natural gateway for a flu pandemic. For the foregoing reasons, I am returning Senate Bill 2133 without my approval. And that's really what we're trying to sort of get across to providers in these state CME events, is that, you know, there is no science behind, you know, not giving these vaccines. And it's really unfortunate that this legislation keeps popping up. And it's still a recurring problem. In 2007, there were new bills, so we had things going on in 21 states. As of August, 15 of them didn't pass, 3 had amended their laws, and 3 are still in play, actually. 2 states end in November at the end of this month, and New Jersey goes all the way until January, so we'll have to see what happens there. But as I mentioned, when we do the CME events, what we're trying to get across to providers is not only the science, but also that you're dealing with a passionate issue for parents. They feel that, you know, even if there's some link, they're worried about it. And you can't just sort of disregard that at all. And so there are a lot of unanswered questions, and we can't prove the negative right now. We can't prove that vaccines do cause autism. You can't prove that they don't either. And it's not a reason not to give them, especially since immunizations are probably one of the greatest public health interventions of the 20th century. So where will we go from here? We'll continue to expand the work of the task forces, both by forging new partnerships as well as building on any existing partnerships that we have. And we're also going to continue to advocate for safe and effective vaccines and sound science-based public health policy. We'd also like you to become involved in this as well. If any of you are interested in joining one of the task forces, please feel free to contact me after the session. We'd love to have as many people as we can on board. And also get involved, advocate for this in your community, tell people how important vaccines are and that they're safe. And also, I just wanted to put up a couple resources for you. Some of those state slides came from Diane Peterson at the Immunization Action Coalition. They can be found at www.immunize.org. It's a great organization. They have a ton of downloadable resources, which are great. Or you can contact Diane directly. She's really terrific. Also, the CDC has a lot of downloadable resources as well. Families Fighting Flu is a great organization. Tragically, everyone who belongs to that organization shares the fact that they have lost a child to influenza because they were not vaccinated against it. The 317 Coalition and Every Child by Two are other groups that you can also look up. So thank you very much for your time. If anyone would like to contact me again about the task forces, please feel free to give me a call or shoot me an email. We would really appreciate having you on board. Thanks.